Okay, picture this. You're out, maybe on the bus or in a shop, and you see an animal you don't expect. A dog, sure, but maybe something else. And you think, wait, what are the rules around that?
It's something a lot of people wonder about.
Exactly. So today we're doing a deep dive into that, specifically service animals, the laws, the realities for people with disabilities, right here in Ontario.
Right. It can get confusing.
It really can. We've looked at sources like Service Animals Ontario Know Your Rights and emergencyhousing.ca to sort of cut through the noise.
For resources.
Yeah, and our mission today, based only on what these sources say, is to really unpack the key rules, your rights, whether you have a service animal or just encounter one, and how easy or hard it is to navigate all this.
Sounds good. Let's get into it.
Okay, so first things first. What is a service animal under Ontario law, according to these sources? How's it defined?
Well, the main law here is the AODA, the Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act.
Oh.
And it gives basically two ways an animal qualifies.
Two ways. Okay.
Yeah. First, if it's, easily identifiable as being used for a disability, think a vest, maybe a harness, specific tags.
Right, the visible cues. That makes sense. That's probably what most people think of. What's the second way?
The second way is less about the animal itself and more about paperwork. It qualifies if the person provides documentation.
Documentation.
Yes, a letter from a regulated health professional.
Yeah.
It needs to confirm that the person needs the animal for reasons related to their disability.
Okay, and this is where, for me, it got really interesting based on the sources. They stress that the law itself, it doesn't mention any restrictions on breed or species or even specific training.
That's exactly right. And it surprises a lot of people. Any animal could potentially qualify, provided that documentation is in place.
So it could be a cat, a bird, a miniature horse, like I joked about earlier.
Technically, yes. If a regulated health professional confirms the need in writing for that specific animal related to the person's disability, the focus isn't the type of animal.
Yeah, it's fascinating because the legal status isn't tied to, say, a certificate from XYZ training school. Or the fact that it's a certain breed, it's tied to the documented need and the animal's function for that person.
So that documentation, that letter, is absolutely central then.
It really is. The source is presented as the primary thing someone might need to show.
And who can write this letter? Is it just doctors?
No, actually, the list is quite broad. The sources mention physicians, yes, but also nurses, psychologists, social workers, psychotherapists, occupational therapists, quite a few different regulated health professionals.
Okay. And the sample letter they showed, it seemed pretty straightforward.
Very. It basically just needs to state the person requires the animal for reasons related to a disability and be signed by the professional. Crucially, it doesn't need to say what the disability is. Protects privacy.
That's important. And just as critical is what isn't needed, right? The sources were clear on that too.
Absolutely. They explicitly say Ontario law does not require any mandatory provincial or federal registration. No specific certification is legally mandated.
So those online registries or certificates you see.
Not legally required here under provincial law. And even things like vests or ID tags, while helpful for making things obvious, they aren't mandatory either.
But there was one exception mentioned. Ottawa.
Yes, good point. Ottawa City does have a requirement for service animals to be registered with the city, but the sources note that registration is free.
Okay. So outside Ottawa, it really boils down to having that letter if the need isn't visually obvious.
Pretty much. Now, stepping back, why do these rules exist? It's because there's a whole framework of laws designed to protect people using service animals.
Right, the sources mentioned several. The big provincial one seems to be the AODA again.
Yes, the Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act.
Yeah.
That's key for guaranteeing access to public spaces and services. And it has teeth. The sources mentioned potential fines up to $100,000 per violation for denying access.
Wow, $100,000. Okay, what else?
Then there's the Ontario Human Rights Code. That's broader, prohibiting discrimination based on disability in areas like services, housing, employment. Denying someone just because they have a service animal falls under that.
And the penalties there.
Can be significant too.
Yeah.
Compensation, other penalties. The sources mentioned potentially over $25,000.
Okay. Any others provincially?
Yes, the Blind Persons' Rights Act gives specific extra protection for guide dogs. Fines there up to $5,000 for interference.
And what about that common question, restaurants?
Ah, yes. The Health Protection and Promotion Act is relevant. It explicitly allows service animals in dining areas, but importantly, not where food is prepared. So no kitchens.
Makes sense. Kitchens, okay. And one more provincial one, DLA, Dog Owners Liability Act. How does that fit?
Right, DLA. While it's mostly about dog owner responsibility if their dog bites someone, the sources mentioned it also offers protection for service animals from being attacked or hurt by other animals.
Interesting. So it works both ways.
Kinda, yeah. And then on top of all these provincial laws, there's a federal one.
Yeah.
The Criminal Code of Canada, Section 445.01, makes it a criminal offense to willfully harm, harass, or even interfere with a service animal or guide dog.
A criminal offense? That sounds serious. What kind of penalty are we talking about?
The sources state the maximum sentence is up to 5 years in prison.
5 years. Just for interfering.
That's what the sources indicate, yes.
Yeah.
It really underlines how seriously the law treats the role these animals play and the need to protect them and their handlers.
Definitely. So you've got these layers, provincial access laws, human rights codes, specific acts, and then federal criminal law. It seems like a really strong legal shield.
It certainly appears robust on paper, yes. Covering access, discrimination, and direct harm.
Okay, so let's get practical. Based on these laws and sources, where can service animals actually go in Ontario?
The access is pretty wide-ranging. Think about most places you go day to day. Restaurants, like we said, dining areas, stores, malls, public transit buses, subways, taxis, parks, movie theaters, schools, workplaces.
Workplaces too.
Yes. Workplaces, hospitals, though generally non-sterile areas. And crucially, housing. Landlords typically can't refuse someone or charge extra pet fees because they have a service animal.
So basically anywhere the public is generally allowed.
That's a good rule of thumb, yes.
But there must be some places where access can be restricted.
Oh, absolutely. There are legitimate limits. The sources mention places like commercial kitchens where food's being prepared for sale.
Right.
Sterile environments in hospitals like operating rooms. Makes sense for hygiene.
Definitely.
And potentially some very specific settings, like maybe inside certain zoo exhibits where another animal could cause distress or danger to the zoo animals. These are usually based on clear health and safety reasons.
No, okay, that clarifies things. Now, knowing the rules is one thing, but how we all interact is another. What did the sources say about etiquette for everyone involved?
Right, this is important. For the general public, the advice is pretty clear. Number one, don't pet or distract a working service animal.
Even if it's really cute.
Even then, they're working. Distracting them could interfere with the task they're doing for their handler, which could even be dangerous.
Okay, good point. What else for the public?
Address the person, the handler, not the animal. And this is a big one. Don't ask intrusive questions about the person's disability. It's private.
Why do you think they have to spell that out? Seems obvious.
I think maybe people get curious or they think they're being friendly, but they don't realize it puts the handler in an awkward position or feels invasive. It's about respecting boundaries and the animal's job.
Makes sense. And what about responsibilities for the handlers themselves?
Yes, the sources cover that too. Handlers need to maintain control of their animal. It shouldn't be disruptive. Keep it clean and hygienic. Always have that documentation, the letter, ready if needed. Ensure the animal is healthy. And if they're in Ottawa, remember that free registration?
They gave an example too, didn't they? Like if the animal starts barking?
Yeah, exactly. If the animal is being disruptive, say barking excessively, the handler is expected to take steps to control it.
In businesses, what's their role?
Businesses generally need to allow access, unless it's one of those legally prohibited areas we discussed. If they have doubts, they can ask to see the documentation, the letter from the health professional.
Not a certificate or ID card.
Correct. The sources emphasize asking for the letter. And if a business does have to deny access for a valid reason, or if they ask someone to leave because the animal is out of control, they should still try to offer an alternative way to provide service.
Like curbside pickup, maybe?
Exactly. Something like that.
Okay. This leads to a critical question.
Yeah.
What if someone is unlawfully denied access? What steps can they take, according to the sources?
Right. If you believe your rights are being violated, the first steps are usually show your documentation, calmly explain your rights under the AODA.
And then
a really key piece of advice from the sources. Ask for the denial in writing.
Why in writing?
It creates a record. It's proof that you are denied access, which can be important if you need to take further action.
Makes sense. And what is that further action? Where do you report discrimination?
The main avenue mentioned is filing a complaint with the Human Rights Tribunal of Ontario. The sources also suggest contacting the Human Rights Legal Support Center for assistance.
Okay.
And if the incident happens in Ottawa, they also mention calling 311, the city's information line.
So there are clear channels to report issues.
Yes, formal avenues exist to seek resolution.
Now, for someone who needs that letter, needs the documentation, did the sources give practical advice on how to get it?
They did. It seems quite practical. Basically, make an appointment with a regulated health professional you see. Could be your family doctor, a specialist, a therapist, whoever fits that regulated list.
Okay.
Explain to them how the animal helps you manage your disability. What tasks does it perform? How does it support you day to day?
To focus on the function.
Exactly. Then ask them for a letter stating you require the animal for disability-related medical reasons. Again, no need for the specific diagnosis in the letter itself.
And keep copies.
Definitely. Keep printed copies, maybe a digital copy on your phone. Have it accessible.
Any other tips?
Yeah, they suggested using 211 Ontario if you need help finding a suitable professional. And they also recommended maybe updating the letter every year or two just to keep it current.
Good practical advice. Finally, the sources listed a bunch of resources too, right? Support systems?
Yes, quite a few. They broke them down into types. Legal help, like the AODA helpline, the Human Rights Commission, ARCH Disability Law Center.
Okay.
Then organizations focus specifically on service animals.
Yeah.
Like National Service Dogs or Lions Foundation Guide Dogs, training resources, info on financial assistance.
Uh-huh.
Though they did note ODSP funding related to this was under review.
Okay.
And those Ottawa-specific resources, like how to do the free registration or contact the Humane Society there. So yeah, it highlights that people aren't totally alone. There are places to turn for help or information.
Great. So let's try and summarize the key takeaways from this deep dive based purely on these sources.
Okay. I'd say the big things are service animal status in Ontario isn't primarily about breed or a specific certificate. It's mostly about the documented need, confirmed by a regulated health professional's letter.
Right. The letter is key.
And second, there are strong, layered laws, provincial and federal, providing rights to access most public spaces and protecting both the handler and the animal.
And understanding those rights, but also the responsibilities for handlers, the public, businesses, that seems crucial for everyone sharing these spaces.
Absolutely. Knowing the rules helps handlers assert their rights and helps everyone else interact respectfully and legally.
This dive really shows how these specific laws aim to build accessibility. Knowing the details helps everyone, really.
It empowers people, definitely.
So here's a final thought to leave folks with. Given that the Ontario definition we looked at is so broad, focusing on function and need, allowing potentially any animal with the right documentation, what does that tell us? What might it suggest about our evolving understanding of disability and just how diverse the support from animals can actually be?
That's a fascinating question. It certainly moves beyond the traditional image, doesn't it?
It really does. Something to think about.